Hello and welcome to History for Weirdos.
We're your hosts, Andrew
and Stephanie.
And each week, we're going to take you on a journey into the strange, obscure, and relentlessly entertaining corners of human history.
Now listen up, friends, because it's about to get weird. Welcome to episode 115, weirdos.
Wow. 115.
Already.
I know. And weirdos, hopefully the new year has treated you well. I know it's treated us mostly well. And then decided
Speak for yourself.
Yeah, I was going to say, and then decided to just dump on Stephanie. She's really sick today. So we're actually not doing video.
Yes, for everyone's sake, I'm not on video today, and maybe you can hear I still sound a little sick, but regardless, I am really excited to hear the episode that you have planned for us today, because you've dropped little, like, tidbits of information, and I'm just hooked already.
I know that you would love this episode. Part Yay. Of the reason why I picked it, honestly.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, you like
and,
me.
And, by the way... Guys, I'm just going to like riz up my co-host a little bit right now to use like some Gen Z lingo. I think you still look beautiful.
Oh, that's so sweet. You guys, that's love right there.
Cue like everyone listening to this right now just like barfing in disgust.
No, that's very sweet to hear when you're all like icky. It's nice. Thank you so much. So I'm being charmed this morning is yes. what you're telling me.
You're getting charmed and you get mm-hmm. to listen to story time.
That's always really good when you're sick is story time.
I mean, okay, let's be real for a second. Like when you're sick,
yeah,
story time is amazing. That's I mean, story time is amazing when you're not sick.
That's why I fell asleep yesterday watching Cinderella.
Oh my God.
Because I needed some story time in my life.
Don't we all?
Don't we all? So tell me, my love, what do you have planned for us today?
Okay, so we're going to go back to ancient Rome, guys, which is, let's be real, it's my favorite.
I'm shocked.
I tried to spread it around, but ancient Rome has my heart,
mm-hmm.
as well as like pretty much all of the ancient world, but specifically Rome.
Right.
So when we think of intrigue and assassination plots in ancient Rome, we often think of the circumstances surrounding Julius Caesar mm-hmm. and also like the Roman Emperor Caligula.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Basically getting stabbed to death or death by shanking, if you will.
Death by shanking. That's definitely what the Romans called it.
Yes. Very violent and sudden ends.
Yeah.
But when we get to like the assassination of another Roman emperor, Commodus, which for reference would have been around like 250 years after the death of Caesar, he was infamously strangled to death in his bathtub in 192 AD on New Year's Eve.
Mm-hmm.
So he did not have a great New Year's in 192, 193.
I'd say worse than me.
Yeah, even worse than you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, however, with his case, that was actually the backup plan. He was first poisoned, but the concoction evidently did not work.
Right.
So they had to resort to strangling him in his bathtub, I'm sure, as one does.
I'm sure lots of people wanted Commodus dead.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, for yeah. backstory, tell me, correct me if I'm wrong, but for the weirdos who may not know, Commodus was the emperor who would fake gladiatorial games.
Yes, he would actually participate as a gladiator, mm-hmm. a Roman emperor, which to Roman sensibilities, this was just beyond outrageous, like
very
bordering
scandalous.
Absurdity. Yeah. But not only that, it's not like he was an incredible fighter and he would beat these people like on one-on-one combat. No, they would dull the other person's weapons. They would even like hamstring them
mm-hmm.
in ways so like to make him look great. So there was never a fair fight with him.
Yeah, it's and disgusting.
If you have seen the movie Gladiator, not historically accurate, but an amazing movie nonetheless, Joaquin Phoenix plays Commodus.
Yes, yes, yes.
And the temperament, I feel like with Commodus, or like...
With Joaquin...
Yes, well, with Joaquin Phoenix playing Commodus,
uh-huh.
I think that's fairly accurate.
Like a brat?
Like a just a brat.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a self... centered, spoiled brat.
Yeah, that's why I think a lot of people probably wanted him dead. So that, yes. No wonder there's like poisoning attempts. And it sounds like there were plots. And then they're like, F it. We're just going to strangle him in the bathtub.
Pretty much,
yeah. Got to get rid of this dude.
So, anyways, this is a long way winded way of me saying that poison was very common, but a lot of times it was ineffectual, depending on the circumstances, right? Very common way to assassinate people in the Greco-Roman world.
Mm-hmm.
So, although this is not to say that like the old-fashioned way of like sword and dagger wasn't really at any point in history not a common way to dispose of enemies, maybe except like very recently.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, a recent phenomenon.
That would be so wild if like world leaders did that to each other.
Just like some world shanked leaders each other. Shanked, yeah.
Sorry, not funny.
You're like laughing. I'm sorry, not funny.
Not funny.
But a certain person would become known as kind of like an OG of poisonings in ancient Rome or the Roman world. Someone who was actually incredibly adept of getting rid of people in a more subtle way. She is sometimes known as the first serial killer in history.
Whoa.
Although for the purpose of our episode today, she is known simply as Locusta of Gaul.
Locusta of Gaul. Got it.
We'll also talk briefly about why I personally don't consider her a serial killer, but I certainly won't hold it against you if by the end of the episode you do.
Okay. Interesting.
Again, that's my personal interpretation, and I very well could be wrong. She was the official poisoner of Emperor Nero, like a state-sponsored poisoner.
Oh, wow. Yes. Nero. Like his cabinet member kind of thing, but for poisoning.
Exactly.
Okay.
So she had like considerable influence during like the early Roman Empire. So before we just dive right into the episode, I have to give some background into what Rome was like during her lifetime. Around like the mid first century AD. So Rome was in the midst of what would ultimately be a 200 year period where the interior of the empire was free from war, called Pax Romana.
Yeah.
And don't get it confused. Like Rome was still in an ascendant phase and was constantly at wars abroad. But those, again, were on the borders of the empire and beyond the limits of the empire. It did not actually affect like the day-to-day lives of Roman citizens.
Yeah, that's why you said the interior.
Exactly. Uh-huh. In the Western world especially, we have become very accustomed to lives without war.
Yeah.
But this is, again, like a very modern phenomenon. So the fact that it was happening in Rome in the ancient world was a really big deal.
Right. For the citizens, it must have felt amazing.
Yes. Especially considering like in the first century BC, so like the prior century, was defined by civil wars where like the late Roman Republic was basically just crumbling and people were murdered in the streets, like even legally, because they found themselves on the wrong list, like common occurrence. In fact, Nero's own great-great-grandfather, the Roman Emperor Augustus, was notorious for killing his political opponents by means of proscription, which again was kind of that legalized murder and theft of a person's property because they're on a list.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's messed up. Did you know that Julius Caesar was very against prescription lists?
You know what? I did know that.
Because he was on one once?
Yes. Fun fact, guys. When Julius Caesar was about 18 years old, he was on a proscription list by a dictator of... by the name of Sulla, like around the 70s BC. And he famously stood up to Sulla as an 18-year-old boy a dictator who had unprecedented power in Roman history and was just like, no, I'm not going to divorce my wife because you don't like her.
Damn.
Like, not even, guys.
See, I knew I shouldn't have made the comment. I knew I'd get you going.
Yeah. So we're... That's just a fun fact. I'm moving on. I could talk about Julius Caesar all day, but this episode is not about him. So Augustus, though, his adopted son after his death, would end up winning the proverbial Game of Thrones at the end of the Roman Republic, and history would remember him as the first emperor of Rome.
Right.
I mean, with his domination of public life and ascending to such heights that even Julius Caesar could not even imagine.
Yeah, you're right.
One of the consequences of the centralization of power was the aforementioned peace, the Pax Romana, because you didn't have, like, essentially rich people in society just fighting each other.
Just because.
Like, that would be kind of like, I know, like Bezos and Musk especially getting like little like Twitter like
oh wars. Yeah, but if they're Twitter wars
were actual wars, yeah. That was like the late Roman Republic,
yeah,
which is absolutely wild. So building projects also during this time, during like the first century AD and the end, like post Roman Republic, became really extravagant. Augustus would even boast at the end of his life that he found Rome a city of bricks and left it a city of marble.
Yeah, very famous quote.
Yes. And again, Rome would be going through a period of intense expansionism that would not reach its zenith until actually the next century, until the second century AD. So basically, all of this is to say that Rome was richer than it had ever been. The games and activities were more extravagant, and food was bountiful.
Yeah.
Things were really good for the first time in a long time.
It would have been really good to be a Roman citizen.
Exactly. Like, wealth disparity was still, like, absurd.
Yeah.
But it wasn't necessarily as bad as it was before during, like, the first century BC.
And tell me, with the games that you mentioned, that, like, the games were really extravagant and things like that, could anyone go, even if you were really poor? Could you go to these games?
Famously, yes. Like, it was designated. It was almost like classist in a way, because like the like different sections would be reserved for different people. Like the worst seats, obviously, were for like the even slaves.
Uh huh.
And like the poor of the poor, or the poorest of the poor, and then like the I think the closer you got down, the better the seats. And like there were even sections reserved for only the senatorial class,
right?
Only the equestrian class.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, everyone could go.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, I know, right?
So even if like you're poor or you're enslaved and life is rough, like the government is still putting on these kind of like spectacles of entertainment for you.
Yes. The famous like saying bread and circuses.
Yes. Yeah.
Comes from this time, funny enough.
Yeah.
Because like you got free food from the government and you also got like free entertainment.
Damn, that sounds nice.
Except that ain't not so as well. And again, like part of that too was like, I mean, they even touched on it in that show, Domina.
Yeah.
Where Augustus says, like, why do you think they allow us in power? They, as in, like, the common people.
Yeah.
Because, like, we're giving them food. We're giving them games. Like, yeah. We're basically distracting them from the fact that their life sucks.
Yeah, you're distracting them from the fact that they outnumber you, but they are at the bottom of the barrel.
Exactly. You can live extravagant lives because you're providing this to people.
Oh, so crazy, so deep, very resonant.
I know, even today.
Even today. That's wild.
Today, even maybe possibly even more so.
Yeah, but in a different way.
In a different way, exactly. Yeah. So this was the Rome of the first century AD, especially like in the mid first century AD. And this is where our protagonist of the story kind of comes into play. Mm-hmm. This sort of world that we have just been talking about.
Okay.
So Locusta was from the Roman province of Gaul, modern day France, which had been conquered roughly 100 years prior by Julius Caesar.
Mm-hmm.
And she was most likely captured or came to Rome before the year 54. We don't know.
Okay.
We actually know next to nothing about her life before this time.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. And again, this is very typical with like ancient sources, especially when writing about women.
Yeah. We don't document their lives.
Yeah. Women were not important in this time period, even though they were.
Right. But the men didn't see that.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know who her parents were, what her upbringing in life was, but more likely she was in some capacity of servitude.
Yeah.
But luckily enough for her, she would eventually find herself in the service of Agrippina the Younger, or Agrippina Minor, the wife of current Emperor Claudius and the mother to the next one, Nero.
Yep.
So very important person in the Julio-Claudian dynasty.
A very important Agrippina.
A very important Agrippina, indeed. So she was particularly adept at using poison, Locusta.
Mm-hmm.
Although she had gained this skill, or like the way she had gained it, is lost to us.
Maybe like it was like local to where she grew up.
It's interesting you said that, because it was speculated that she learned to concoct the poisons from her Celtic ancestors.
Yeah.
And like the ancient Roman writers Tacitus and Suetonius wrote that she was dedicated to her art of poisons and studied many plants and herbs. And this allowed her to even invent new poisons
and potions. So she was a scientist.
Yeah, I kind of personally imagine that this was like a family trade.
Yes.
And that had been passed down. We have no way of knowing for certain, but in my mind, that's kind of how I imagine it.
That's how I pictured it too, for some reason. Like her grandmother and her mom teaching her.
Exactly. Like, you know, because Gaul at this point had been, you know, under Roman occupation, rule, whatever you want to call it, for about 100 years, right?
Yeah.
And so like they were Roman, but they still had that, it was kind of like Celtic and like ancestral.
The culture.
Like, culture, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Like it, and they, at this point and moving forward, it would only blend more and more together. You kind of get this Romano Celtic subculture in Gaul.
Yeah.
But anyways, moving on, we know that she got to Rome in around 54 AD, right?
Mm-hmm.
She teamed up with two other women named Canidia and Martina,
mm-hmm.
who became known as kind of a trio of witches who poisoned people.
Oh, nice.
Yes. I mean, it was common in the ancient world for people like of this trade, poisoners, to be seen as like sorceresses and witches.
Very Shakespearean.
Very Shakespearean. And Locusta was referred to in many sources as like a sorceress herself.
Dope.
Yeah.
I like it.
It's very punk rock.
Well, I think it makes sense, right? I said she's like a scientist. She's like a botanist, essentially. But they don't have formal sciences yet. So it's just magic to them.
Kind of, like
magic,
yeah.
And science are kind of the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. That's a really good way of putting it. I mean, nothing is... It's interesting because nothing is known about the other two women. Mm-hmm. Like, literally nothing. Just that they were acquaintances with our girl, Locusta.
Yeah.
So, anyways, since there was quite a bit of greed and hatred in Rome, especially during this time, like, a lot of those old... like Republican values, and Republican as in like the Republic.
The Roman Republic.
The Roman Republic were kind of gone.
Yeah.
And so just greed was like kind of like the central tenant, I guess.
The rich wanted to get richer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean.
I can't imagine a world like that.
Can't imagine that. Especially not today.
Especially not today.
Well, this positioned her really well because... you know, people wanted to get rid of their political enemies, their business enemies. And so they're like, and she's like, hey, I have a way to do it without you even like getting near the person.
What a great marketing strategy.
She made a lot of money really quickly.
I noticed you have this problem. I have a solution.
Yes.
And no one would know.
We don't know how many murders she was responsible for, but it's an uncounted amount of murders that she's either directly or indirectly responsible for.
That's insane.
I mean, I imagine that it would be hard to have proof of her involvement.
Yeah.
But again, I haven't mentioned this yet. It didn't really matter in ancient Rome if you were guilty or not a lot of the times.
Right.
That was inconsequential. Because she did end up in prison a few times, or at least twice.
Yeah.
But she was released both times due to her aristocratic connections.
Yeah. In Rome, it mattered more who you know.
Exactly. Yeah. Rule of law was kind of nice. It was... nice if justice was done, but it wasn't necessarily
expected.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly. I couldn't have said it better myself.
Uh-huh.
So what was her method of poisoning, right? There's a few that are attested to. So the main one being Atropa belladonna, or deadly nightshade.
We've talked about that before in previous episodes.
And we have, yes. I cannot remember which one, but...
In two, I think, well, referenced in two instances, one and... actually an old Italian poisoner who made that poisonous soap.
Giulia Tofana.
Yep, exactly. I didn't think you'd remember.
Interesting.
Or the water that she'd make had belladonna in it. And then I don't know if it was in that same episode, but or I think maybe when we were talking about tuberculosis, women would put belladonna in their eyes to make their pupils like giant.
That's insane.
That's so stupid.
Wow, thank you. Yes. I remember those now.
This plant has come up in multiple episodes.
I know. And it is interesting, too, like the parallels between Locusta and Giulia Tofana. But anyways, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole because we could stay here all day.
Yeah.
But the deadly nightshade is the one that's attested to the most. We do know that she used other plants and poisons like arsenic, henbane, mandrake, aconite, Colchium, Hellebore, and yew extract.
Damn.
She really knew her stuff.
That's a long roster of poisons.
Yes. Oh, as well as Amanita phalloides, or aka Death Cap Mushrooms.
Death Cap Mushrooms? That's a great band name.
That is a great band name. Okay.
Weirdos.
One of you guys, one of you weirdos has to start a band named Death Cap Mushrooms.
Please, 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 and let us have backstage passes.
Please. Well, anyways, back to our narrative. We're in 54 AD, and Locusta has found herself in jail once again. But now, Agrippina the Younger, again, sometimes known as Agrippina Minor, contacted Locusta, and she got her to work on something really big.
Exciting.
Agrippina wanted Locusta to make a poison to kill her husband, Claudius, the Roman Emperor Claudius.
Oh, shit. That's big.
That's really big.
There's like no one more scary to try to kill.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
It's a big deal. So there's a few reasons as to why. The main one being that this would elevate Agrippina's son, Nero, to the purple, or to being the emperor.
Great idea.
And this is the infamous Nero that we know of. Not a great idea in hindsight.
She was a visionary.
Yes. The reason being is that Nero was not the biological son of Claudius.
Damn.
He was a stepson. And Claudius did have a living biological son at this time who was younger. So she probably felt like her time was getting, you know, was shortening.
Yeah, to have her son ascend to power.
Exactly.
Because as soon as the age gap starts to close, they're obviously going to go for the biological son.
Right.
Yeah.
And Claudius... his biological son is named Britannicus, just FYI.
That's a cool name.
Britannicus. Mm-hmm. It's kind of ridiculous because they would give those kind of cognomens out to someone who, like, you conquered a new area, right? So, like, the most famous one is Scipio Africanus.
Yeah.
Because he conquered North Africa. Really, it was just, like, Carthage.
Yeah.
But, like, this was, like, a 13-year-old boy. Yeah, he hadn't conquered anything yet.
Isn't it the same with Germanicus?
No, Germanicus did indeed.
He earned it?
He did earn it because he did. He led punitive campaigns against the Germans, and he did conquer new areas, but immediately withdrew. It was just a punitive campaign.
Oh, okay.
That's a really good example, but I could go down that rabbit hole like crazy as well.
So she's like, help me kill my husband.
Help me kill my husband.
Do you think Claudius also sucked as a husband?
Probably.
Yeah.
Because this wasn't even the first wife to try to kill him. He had another wife that tried to kill him.
That's so embarrassing. So
also, Claudius was kind of seen as like a bumbling fool.
Oh, yeah.
Which is kind of unfair because he was actually, of all the Julio-Claudians besides Augustus, he was the best.
Yeah.
I mean, look at who you're also running up against. Tiberius, who was insane.
Ew.
Caligula, who was even more insane.
Boo.
And then Nero, who was also insane.
Yeah.
So.
Well, why did his first wife try to kill him? Do you know?
I think she was having an affair.
Damn.
And she wanted to install that guy as the emperor.
But I kind of feel bad for Claudius now.
I do feel a little bit. Like, he... he also oversaw the conquest of Britain.
Yeah.
Which...
So then he named his son Britannicus?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it was like a hereditary title, which isn't supposed to be.
Yeah, it's not
but
supposed
again,
to be a thing.
A lot of like this being a Roman emperor thing is still kind of new. And
yeah.
So you could get away with whatever.
That's so interesting. Have you read the book I, Claudius?
No, I haven't, but...
I'm really interested in reading it.
I am too, because it shows, I think, from his perspective, because he was a little bit older.
Yes.
He knew... Augustus.
Yeah,
right?
It's like a fictionalized first person telling.
Exactly.
Of his story, yeah.
And I know like Livia Drusilla is kind of seen as like a Locusta character, right? A poisoner.
Yeah.
Someone who like uses subterfuge.
Not that I support that at all.
Oh my god, we could just talk about ancient Rome all day. Okay. Now going back to the story though, Locusta and
Agrippina,
like re-understand her motive, why she wants to kill her husband Claudius.
Yeah.
But how are they going to do it, right? Depending on the source, it could have gone down actually a couple of different ways. And we'll see. This is a theme throughout this episode.
Okay.
So either she brewed some of that deadly nightshade that we talked about, which Claudius drank and then died, or she fed him poisoned mushrooms, possibly those death cap mushrooms.
Damn.
Which made him sick, but did not actually kill him. And then this would be quickly remedied by his doctor. Interestingly enough, his doctor's name is Xenophon, but it's not the Xenophon that we had mentioned in the Sacred Band of Thebes episode.
Oh, okay.
By like shoving a feather down his throat, right, to induce
make
vomiting.
Him throw up, yeah.
But the feather was poisoned.
Shut up.
Yes. Whether the doctor knew that or not also differs on the source as well.
Interesting.
So regardless of it all, Claudius was dead in 54 AD, and Nero would ascend as the new emperor. But little did he know that he would be, you know, the fifth and last emperor of the Julian-Claudian dynasty.
Yeah, because they all suck.
Because they all sucked.
Yeah.
So immediately after the assassination, Locusta was thrown in jail and implicated in the plot.
What?
By Agrippina.
Shut up, Agrippina. Yes. That's not nice.
I mean, and the beauty of it, here's the genius of it. No one was going to believe that Agrippina orchestrated this.
No, of Locusta, course not.
Like, who's going to, who are you going to believe? Some like random Gaulish girl?
Yeah.
Or like an the heir to like, yeah.
The wife of one emperor, the mother of another.
Exactly.
Like, who has more power?
And who has like a family lineage going back to like Augustus and Livia, you know?
Yeah, like, even if they do, even if someone did believe like, yeah, I bet Agrippina did hire her, you're not going to say that.
Exactly. Because it didn't matter if you were actually guilty or not in ancient Rome.
Yeah. The so, optics matter.
The optics are what matters, yes. However, though, Locusta was saved by Nero, who saw that she could probably be pretty useful in disposing of his enemies.
That's true, I guess, yeah. Yes. I'm not a big Nero fan, so I'm like, damn, I guess he's right.
Classicists, you know, sometimes analyze this as her complicity in the plot to have killed Claudius. Mm. So almost like using this as kind of like proof, like, hey, this is your reward. Like, I'm breaking you out of jail.
I see. Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, so she was pardoned, basically.
For sure.
And either way, Nero commissioned her to kill his stepbrother, Britannicus.
Oh.
Pretty much immediately.
No.
Yeah, he's only 13 years old at this time.
I had a feeling that would
he
happen.
He was young. She was a state-sponsored poisoner now, and Locusta was going to concoct a poison to kill Britannicus as swiftly as possible, but to make it seem natural.
Uh-huh.
Locusta most likely opted for like some sort of arsenic poison in this endeavor, but it was not effective, and Britannicus ended up living.
He's young, yeah.
Yes, he's young. This enraged Nero so much that he personally flogged Locusta.
Wow, he's such a great guy.
I mean, yeah, he's a peach.
Oh my god, he's like, you didn't kill my little brother.
I'm gonna whip you now.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so he was just really dumb.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I think he was a spoiled brat.
Yeah,
I mean,
of course.
We keep on going to that, right? That theme there.
That's what happens when you inherit essentially almost like absolute power.
Yes.
When you're raised to think like, this is what you're going to get.
And he wasn't like he was like in line for the throne, right? Necessarily. Yeah. Like from birth, like Commodus was.
Yeah.
But he did grow up in absurd wealth, right? Like he has a lineage to Augustus. He has a lineage to Livia, right? Even though they never had kids together.
Yeah.
So he was like, he grew up in proximity
kind of like
power.
Nobility, yeah, basically.
He had nobility and he had like insane wealth that like most even senators couldn't even dream of.
Yeah.
So we're going to go to a dinner party now the following year in, what was it, 55 AD.
Okay, let's go.
So Locusta managed to get the poisoned poor little Britannicus, which killed him quickly.
Mm.
And this story is actually kind of interesting because Britannicus was brought a hot wine, which was tasted by his official food taster. So everything was hunky-dory, right?
Yeah.
Not so. Britannicus wanted to cool down his wine, so he added some water to it, which was common in the ancient world, both in Greece and in Rome.
Yeah.
But the thing was, the water was poisoned, most likely with the belladonna.
Oh.
So he had fits, and as he was dying, like in front of people at a dinner party, Nero ordered everyone to leave him be, claiming that Britannicus was just having an epileptic fit, which he did suffer from.
Oh.
So he's just like, yeah, let him be. He's fine, but he's literally dying in front of people.
That's so terrifying. What terrifying final moments to have.
Yeah. Even Tacitus, the Roman historian writing just like a couple decades later, would write that the boy, quote, immediately lost alike both voice and breath.
Oh.
I know. Nero was a real son of a bitch.
Yeah.
There's a few Romans that I think I, or historical people that I like hate more than Nero. Like,
yeah.
Really, really dislike.
He's just so terribly selfish.
Terribly selfish and just a horrible, no redeeming qualities.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
It's interesting though. I'm not going to go down this rabbit hole too much. I could be a little bit corrupted by the ancient sources though, because they always wanted to make sure they painted him the worst light possible.
That's true.
He was a bad person, don't get me wrong, but they also, you know, tended to possibly twist. So we don't know for certain like how evil Nero actually was.
Is Nero the one that kicked his pregnant wife?
Yes.
Okay. I think he's pretty bad.
Yeah. Again, though, that was like some of those authors that just absolutely hated Nero.
Yeah.
But I think that's true. I think that's true.
I think he did. Didn't she die?
Yeah, she did.
Yeah.
And their child.
Like he wasn't trying to kill her.
Right.
I guess to his
benefit. Yeah.
Defense. But he kicked her and she died. So, yeah, we're not Nero fans here.
We're not Nero fans. We're not Nero stans.
No.
No. So, anyways, though, this time, now that the poison worked on Britannicus, Nero was very pleased with Locusta and her services. In fact, she was rewarded handsomely. Nero gave her multiple estates, as well as servants to tend to them.
Nice.
He also instructed her to create a school for assassinations. I'm not joking.
Make a school of assassins for me.
Yes.
Okay.
So even
it's totally not delusional.
Totally not delusional. Even sending her pupils to instruct.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
So basically creating like an ancient Roman equivalent of like a CIA hitman school.
That would be such a cool like fiction series.
I don't know.
Of like the students at Locusta's assassin school.
Ooh, that's a good
Weirdos,
idea.
Weirdos, get on it.
Get on it, guys.
I want to read that.
I know. I love how we're like, oh, we should do that. We're like, no.
No.
You guys do it.
We start the band. make the books. Make the TV shows.
Those are some really good ideas. Damn.
Yeah, thank you.
Guys got to get on it. So a much later source claimed that she was given slaves and prisoners to even conduct experiments on.
Oh, hell
and
no.
And this is kind of where that her being the first serial killer comes from.
Yeah.
Because if true, then yeah, she's like the first attested to serial killer ever.
Wow.
Because that means awful. That would imply that she like
personally was doing it over and over again just to hone her skill of killing.
Right. And in the best light possible, she was amoral, right?
Yes.
In the worst light possible, she enjoyed this.
Yes.
Either way, it does not good.
Do you think that to be a serial killer, you need to enjoy it? Is that what you're...
I think it needs to bring some sort of satisfaction.
Interesting.
Because I don't...
That's not within the definition.
I know, but you always see that with serial killers. They enjoy it. They get off on it. Like, in some way, right? Yeah. It could be different.
Yeah.
But they always... Oh, it creeps me out. I can't even talk about it.
Of course. It's terrifying.
Yeah. It's like, how do you enjoy that? That I would, if I had to kill someone, I would be traumatized for the rest of my life.
Yeah. Like, because you have
like
a normal.
Even in self-defense.
I know. You have a normal brain. You're a good person.
Yeah.
That's interesting, though, that you see it that way. I feel like, I think you could be a serial killer and not enjoy it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then we might disagree on her classification of a serial killer. Okay. Marriage in shambles. Okay, so now we're going to skip ahead a little bit to the downfall of Locusta.
I had a feeling this was coming.
So, unfortunately, in the ancient world, again, we just sometimes get a period where we don't know what happens and people fall off the historical record. And that happens to Locusta for like 15 years.
Yeah.
She just falls off the historical record, right?
Which probably means things are going as planned for Nero.
I think so too.
If something was not going according to his plan, I bet it would show up again.
Right. Or if she was involved in some huge plot.
Yeah.
But anyways, she's finally mentioned about 15 years later. But before we get to her, let's talk about Nero again. So he was incredibly unlikable.
Yeah.
Incredibly unlikable. I mean, he did, like, it's not part of Lacusta's journey, but he did, like, 5 years later after Claudius was murdered, he ended up murdering his own mother.
Agrippina gets murdered too?
Yes, by Nero. There's actually a rather absurd and somewhat mysterious kind of story around her murder, but they all, like, because all the sources differ from each other, but they all do agree that he tried to have her sink on a boat in a lake first.
Oh.
Yeah, like, really just weird.
That's a weird way to do it.
Yeah. She survived, but then was killed later.
Okay.
It's not important. Nero was hated throughout Rome, and it's hard to know, like, what he actually, did or didn't do, because all the writing from this time in the next, like, 100-plus years...
It's just inflammatory.
Oh, inflammatory and incredibly anti-Nero.
Yeah.
Again, but it's probably because there's a basis for how... Because he was such a terrible person. But yeah. It's being exaggerated.
Yeah, you're right.
So, I mean, even his role in, like, in Rome burning, in that great fire of Rome, is most likely exaggerated, and he probably wasn't even there, let alone was
playing
complicit.
The fiddle.
Yeah, playing the fiddle. Again, that's my own personal interpretation, but that's what I think. But again, this kind of goes to show that people's hatred of him in 68 AD got to such a point that the governor of a large Spanish province declared himself as the new emperor, and Nero had to flee Rome as his life was in danger. Mm. Again, there's a lot of evidence that he was hated, but amongst, interestingly, the lower classes, there seemed to be periods of mourning for him after he died. So, like, kind of leading us to believe that maybe he wasn't as hated universally as, like, the authors would want us to
believe. Think. Yeah.
Ultimately, though, he would commit suicide, but interestingly did not use the poison that was given to him by Lacusta, funny enough.
Oh, so she made him a poison.
Like a very fast-acting, like, okay, take this if you're captured kind of thing. Like almost like the cyanide pills of like 100 years ago.
Okay, and he chose not to use that method.
Yeah, and instead being stabbed.
Okay.
Maybe he lost his poison or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's really interesting because there's this famous story that like Nero, he woke up in the middle of the night in his palace and everyone was gone. Like, he even tried to get, like, a servant or a slave to, like, come assist him in suicide, and no one was there. Like, no one to even have him killed.
Oh,
like, he was just abandoned. That's why he fled Rome.
Yeah.
So, but Nero's now dead, and Lacusta's life is in danger because she was seen as an accomplice to the deceased emperor, who was declared as an enemy of the state by the Roman Senate.
Okay.
So, the new emperor, Galba... had control over the military. He had the support of the Praetorian Guard as well as the Senate.
That's what you need. The trifecta right there.
Exactly. He was now in control. He was in control of like the city and control of the military.
Uh-huh.
That's very important this time. And he's just going to go through a purge of all of Nero's closest associates, especially ones that had committed violence on his behalf.
Uh-oh.
Lacusta is like on the top of the list.
Uh-oh.
So... And Galba certainly thought that she was responsible for murders. He claimed or accused her of killing over 400 people.
Wow. That's quite a number.
Yeah. She would be rounded up amongst some other close associates of Nero. A later Roman historian, Cassius Dio, would refer to them, these like group of people, as, quote, the scum that had come to the surface in Nero's days.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah, that's what... Again, and he's much later. He was writing at the time of like Commodus even after that. So very interesting. So we get to her death now, which itself, again, is covered a little bit in mystery and absurdity. I'll get to that in a second. What we know for certain is that she was dragged through the streets of Rome in chains before she was killed publicly.
Mm.
How she was killed publicly is...
Up for
debate?
According
to legend, yeah.
Okay.
Because some of this stuff is just, again, like I said, absurd.
Okay, tell us.
So she couldn't be killed by poison because she'd built up quite a tolerance to poisons.
Mm.
So she had to be offed differently. And again, here's where we get into the realm of legend. We're not really certain if either of these stories happened or one of them happened. My guess is that it isn't either.
Mm-hmm.
So one story goes that she was strangled and that her body was burnt at the stake publicly. But this seems to be a little anachronistic.
Yeah, they didn't do that back then.
Yeah, it seems to be very much so like the 17th century witch.
Yeah.
Not necessarily like ancient witch.
Yeah.
And then the next one is even more absurd. And it's kind of insane, but here it goes. Like, the story goes that, very bluntly, that she was tortured and she was sexually assaulted by a giraffe before being ripped apart by lions.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Like,
absolutely ridiculous.
Just to be blunt, I do not think that happened, but it is a legend surrounding her death, so I had to share it.
It sounds like she must have been seen as a very grandiose figure, and therefore the people probably made the circumstances of her death grander and grander to kind of fit the legend of her.
I agree.
Because neither of those things sound plausible.
I agree. And it's interesting you say that, because mm-hmm. we're going to get into her legacy now. And I think that plays into her legacy.
Mm-hmm.
So she would go on and live in infamy, even in ancient Rome after her death.
Yeah.
So see, like, Roman authors, again, hated Nero, everything he stood for. They thought he was the antithesis of Roman values.
Okay.
Right? The degeneracy, not being honorable, not having distinguished military career, etc.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And part of that was using the quote-unquote womanly method of killing your opponents, because real men use knives, or they hired people to use knives to kill their opponents.
Oh. Yes. The poison is too womanly.
It's too womanly. Obviously joking aside, but at the same time, not really joking, because that is more or less like what they thought.
Yeah. Very, very sexist society. I mean.
Yeah, especially in today's standards. Absolutely.
Women had no rights.
Yes.
They were property. Right. So to do something like a woman would be to be like downgrading yourself, essentially.
Kind of. Exactly.
Especially for the emperor.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was especially like at the time of like these people still kind of have like some sort of folk remembrance of what it was like during the Republic.
Yeah.
Obviously romanticizing that.
Yeah.
And thinking, oh, it was so much better back then. It's like, yeah, because people were getting killed by knives. People were like honorable and killing you like in the open. But
that's so much more manly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, yeah, but acts of violence are just being committed on the street. It's not necessarily a good thing.
No.
Anyways, Locusta was like essentially an extension of the personification of Nero's villainy, right?
Okay.
These authors definitely wanted to record Locusta's exploits and made sure to shine her in the worst light possible.
Yeah.
I mean, in fact, like Locusta's very existence became a way for Nero's enemies to criticize him.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
see, you align yourself with this woman from Gaul. You do this like woman thing, this foreigner thing, whatever it is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, her name would even become a byword for evil itself.
Oh my gosh.
So.
I'd be flattered.
Yeah. I mean, so yeah, going to, like, that was exactly what you were saying earlier.
Yeah. It's just such a big, I don't know, like, exaggeration probably.
Yeah.
Of who she was and what she did. Obviously, what she did wasn't great, is how she survived, but terrible.
Terrible.
But I'm sure the numbers are exaggerated and a lot of things around her.
I agree.
Are exaggerated. Yeah.
I absolutely agree. So even in pop culture, she would be spoken about back in the ancient world and in the modern one.
Mm-hmm.
So she's relevant in pop culture for a very long time. So Decimus Junius Juvenalis, or just simply known as Juvenal, and was a Roman poet.
Oh.
Kind of at the end of the first century, beginning of the second century. So just a few decades after Locusta's death. He would write a collection of satirical poems called The Satires.
Okay.
Very famous. It's a classic work, one of the great collection of satirical poems during this age. But in it, he describes a woman so good at making poisons that she was even more skilled than Locusta.
What? Gasp.
Yes. So that's like, she was held to like that standard. Like she was, that's what I meant. Like
she's like the best of the best.
She's the Michael Jordan of making poisons in the ancient world.
Oh my God. That's amazing. What a beautiful comparison.
Yes. You're welcome, weirdos, for that.
I'm sure Michael Jordan is flattered.
I know. I really hope Michael Jordan hears that. Anyways, more recently, she was really popular, actually, weirdly enough, in like kind of like the silent film era.
Ooh.
So like the 1900s or 1901s, 1910s.
Ooh, okay.
Including a 1908 film called Humanity Through the Ages and 1911's Les Filles de la Coste.
I have no idea what you just said.
Yeah, I was trying my best French there, and I don't speak French, so I just kind of like wing it.
What's that mean?
Les Filles de la Coste.
Okay.
Is like the really crappy American French.
I love it.
Doesn't that mean like the children of a cust or something?
The girls of...
F-I-L-S?
Yeah, the girls.
Oh, the girls. Okay. So you know what I was saying.
Yeah.
That's good enough. Anyways, she was referenced numerous times and even has a chapter named after her also in the classic novel, The Count of Monte Cristo.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, so again, like she's really remembered in pop culture. I mean, even in a Doctor Who episode in the 60s too.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
What's interesting also...
That's how you know you've made it though.
Exactly. Doctor if you're in Doctor Who. What's interesting about her is that we have no words attested to her. Whether said out loud or written, she is entirely voiceless.
Wow. So we have no idea really how she felt about any of this.
Exactly. And that's what, like, her actions, or she has lived on solely through her actions. And I had this revelation when I was finishing up my notes on her.
Yeah.
And it would just be so interesting, kind of to your point, to hear, like, her thoughts and read up on motivations, but, like, of why she did these things,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. Did she enjoy it? Did she not enjoy it?
Exactly.
Was she doing it, like, she hated it, but she knew this was how she had to survive? We have no idea.
No idea on any of that.
We know only, it sounds like, from what the men report about her.
Yes, and to me, it just really irks me that we'll never know. Because just like that side of brain of me, it's like, it's the investigative side of like, I need to know and I'll never know. And that's yeah. just really, really bugs me.
And obviously the authors we have describing her are biased against her because of her association with Nero.
Exactly. And I wouldn't trust them to like look into her insights, maybe report facts. Even then they'll embellish things.
Yeah.
But not necessarily like insight, because that will just be way off.
Wow. Yeah, you're right.
Regardless, though, her legacy certainly lives on to this day. And that, my fellow weirdos, is the story of Locusta of Gaul.
Yay! Thank you so much, babe.
And you know what? It seemed like you got a little bit better during the story time.
Yeah, I could feel my energy waning now. But the story definitely like hyped me up.
Nice.
And now I'm probably going to go sleep again, even yeah. though that's all I've been doing.
There we go. You sound a lot better than you did yesterday, so that's good.
Good. And I have to say, I think earlier you said the French word was F-I-L-S.
Yeah.
That means sons, not girls. I'm sorry. Okay. Just needed to correct myself.
No, fair enough.
This was amazing, though. I had never heard of her. I had heard of a lot of the escapades of Nero, unfortunately, but I had never heard of her, of Locusta.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, Nero is so well attested to in history. And again, that's kind of the... For me, it's like the point of History for Weirdos, right? Like highlight people, good and bad, that aren't really talked about.
Exactly.
And Locusta, she is, like, you know, like it's not like no one ever talks about her, like clearly, right? She's referenced like throughout the centuries, but, you know, in our popular imaginations. Yeah, exactly. Especially with Roman history. I mean, very rare do people ever talk about women unless they are like
associated
Olivia
Drusilla. With men.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. Right. And they're powerful in their own right.
Yeah. No, that was so, so interesting. And this was great. I also have to tell the weirdos that you had decided that since I started off the month with like a murder, that we had to do a murder theme for the month, which
yes.
I was not aware of.
Yes, we were doing a murder theme, a historical murder, historical true crime.
Historical true crime for January.
Yes. And so weirdos, kind of like wrapping this up, I want to know what you guys think. So especially if you're listening on Spotify, leave a comment and let us know. Do you think Locusta was a serial killer or not? I'm genuinely curious. And again, if you think she is, I will not be offended, I promise.
I think she is.
Yeah, our marriage is over.
You just said you wouldn't be offended. You promised.
I promised. I lied.
I think just by like textbook definition, like leaving no room for nuance, yes, you could categorize her as a serial killer.
Nice. Okay. Well, then she would be the world's first serial killer.
But you think no.
I don't think so.
And you think because we don't understand her motives, we can't categorize exactly. her.
I think she was used as a pawn for the machinations of very powerful people.
Yeah, I could see that. And then I could, that's a really good argument.
And she was simply doing this to survive.
Yeah, I like that. I like that interpretation. Weirdos, let us know.
Yeah, let us know, guys. I'm really curious. So if you're listening on Spotify, again, you can leave a comment and let us know. And last, but certainly not least, my sources for this episode.
Mm-hmm.
We have History Hit, All That Is Interesting, AncientOrigins.net, Classical Wisdom, and I even use the ancient sources themselves, Tacitus or Annals by Tacitus, and then The Life of Nero by Suetonius.
Oh my gosh, look at you, so professional.
And then Wikipedia.
And then Wikipedia. Balanced.
It's perfectly balanced.
Well, thank you, Andrew, for helping me feel better, at least for a little while, with story time this week. Thank you, weirdos, for listening. Do not forget, especially like at the start of the year, it really helps us if you rate, review, or share an episode that you really like with someone. We really appreciate you guys and how much you've helped us grow. So let's keep doing it. And otherwise, until next week, weirdos.
Until next time, weirdos. Adios.
Goodbye.